Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stepped on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3. Raymond Parts the Third.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
To Hardaway, missed the three again. Peyton's got the rebound.
There's
baseline
a triple double.
Left.
There's a triple yes, double.
Yes, it is.
Five in
his
a row.
Fifth straight. He brings it across half court. 15, 10, and 11 for Elfrid Peyton. Screen from Diallo. Miller can't do much with it. Throws it to Peyton. Drives the right slot. Freezes. Shoots halfway down the lane and scores. Timeout, Rick Carlisle.
The rebounding part to me has been the biggest surprise, I think, you know, to be a point guard and be able to come up with double-digit rebounds night after night after night. It's really tough to do it. Anytime they mention you in the same breath with Westbrook, you got to feel real good about it. They mention it in the same breath with Oscar Robinson. That's a whole nother area.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parts III, your host for the Rap Game with RP3, broadcasting live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in lovely Broussard. We'll be here all week for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. We have a 2 hours of just kick butt and take in name sports talk lined up for you. At 7:15, we'll have Corey Diaz from the Monroe News Star. He's going to help us break down and preview the Grambling State men's basketball team. They're in the CIT, the collegeinsider.com tournament. They'll be playing in that on Wednesday. Corey covers the Grambling State Tigers. He's going to help us break that down. Then at 7:32, we'll have Adam Hunsucker of the Monroe News Star. That's right, it's a 2-for-1 deal this morning for our friends in North Louisiana. He's going to help us break down ULM. The Warhawks are also in the CIT. They're hosting a game this week in that tournament. Adam's going to help us break down that for the Sun Belt rival and in-state rival of the Raging Cajuns. Then we'll close out today's show around 7:45 with the one and only, the man himself, the STM legend, and the man who helps run the ship over here for the Louisiana Open, the one and only Danny Jones will be joining us live right here on site. We got a lot to talk about today. We got Ed Orgeron getting that much-deserved pay raise. We'll throw it out on Twitter, YSU, if Bebe deserves that kind of pay raise, and much, much more. But we'll start things off with the former Raging Cajun great Elfrid Peyton. As you heard there on the call, Elfrid Peyton got his fifth consecutive triple-double, his sixth overall for the season. He did so in the Pels overtime win, 129-125 over the Dallas Mavericks. Now, you heard Alvin Gentry talk about the fact that Elfrid Peyton has been able to do this by rebounding, that the rebounding is what's been surprising for him on what Elfrid's been able to do. Here's what's even more surprising is this is the list that Elfrid Peyton now finds himself on. Russell Westbrook, Oscar Robertson, Wilt Chamberlain, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, and then him. That's right. Elfrid Peyton is on a list with a league MVP that's still playing in the league and broke a record that many thought could never be broken, the most triple-doubles in the season record. That's what Russell Westbrook did 2 seasons ago when he won the league MVP. There's Oscar Robertson, Hall of Famer, one of the greatest to ever play. Some say the best small guard to ever play the game. Wilt Chamberlain, scoring machine, one of the most dominant players of all time, Hall of Famer. on the Mount Rushmore of all-time greats in NBA history. And then, of course, the man considered the GOAT, Michael Jordan. That's the list Elfrid Payton is now on, ladies and gentlemen. The Raging Cajun's own, the Louisiana native, the man who represents the West Bank, Elfrid Payton, is now in the record books. Fifth consecutive triple-double for Elfrid Payton. And what's so impressive with Elfrid is, look, this season looked to be lost for him personally. I'm not just talking about the Pels as an organization with the Anthony Davis trade drama, which resulted in pettiness on social media, pettiness with the New Orleans Pelicans social media team in regards to Davis, how that's all blown up in his face, how that's all blown up in the face of LeBron James and Magic Johnson and the Los Angeles Lakers. Dell Demps got fired finally because of that. I'm not talking about that lost season and not being able to make the postseason, but Elfrid had something to prove this summer. This is a guy who was a lottery pick by the Orlando Magic. He earned all rookie honors with the Magic. But Orlando is not a well-run organization, as we know. Anyone that follows the NBA knows this. And he kind of got lost in the shuffle. He got known as a guy who was known more for maybe his hair than it was for his overall play and what he could contribute. He gets sent off to the Phoenix Suns, finishes off last year there. He's always been a good player. But for many, they didn't think that he has ever lived up to the potential that he showed playing for Bob Marlin here in Lafayette for the Raging Cajuns. Well, he sure does seem like he's living up to his potential now. You know, and back in the summer, he signs just that one-year deal. That's it. Okay? He had something to prove. People were like, well, he's just a guy. And in a lot of ways, people around the New Orleans market or people that cover the Pels are thinking, well, you know, maybe this guy can just be a stopgap guy. You know, we lost Rajon Rondo in free agency. The Pels were actually aggressive. I will give credit to Dell Demps. They went after Elfrid because they thought there was a possibility that Rajon Rondo would not come back. If they could re-sign Rondo, which ultimately they did not, he ended up going to the Los Angeles Lakers, that they would have an insurance policy with a backup point guard. And he gets injured this year. He has the opportunity to play, the opportunity to be the point guard for his, you know, hometown team, to represent his state. And he was just banged up. Missed a ton of time, nearly half the season. But since he's been back this last time and he's been healthy, slowly but surely, Alvin Gentry's put him more and more out there. And with them having to shut down Drew Holiday, more is being asked of Elfrid here down the stretch as the Pels wrap up this season. And he's delivering. 19 points last night, 10 boards, 11 assists. That's for a point guard. Now, I understand that the NBA has changed. We saw that 2 years ago with Russell Westbrook getting triple-doubles like crazy. We've seen James Harden get triple-doubles like crazy. You know, it's a different game. We've gone away from the bigs. We've gone away from that post-play, put your back up against the basket kind of play. I understand that. And guards now have more control over the tempo of the game and the outcome of the game, and in particular the scoring and how the basket is scored in the modern game. I understand all that. But to get five consecutive triple-doubles. Elfrid Payton could tank. You know, Elfrid Payton could not be out there giving maximum effort. I mean, this season's lost. The Pels are not making the playoffs. The Pels are competing for a draft lottery pick. They're going to blow up the team in the offseason. They're going to trade away Anthony Davis. They're going to be searching. They're still searching for an actual permanent general manager and a director of basketball operations after firing Dell Demps. This team is going to be different. Are they going to re-sign Julius Randle? Are they going to re-sign Elfrid Payton? If I'm the New Orleans Pelicans, one of my first priorities before I even deal with the Anthony Davis, am I going to be able to ship him to the Boston Celtics or the New York Knicks or the Los Angeles Clippers or whoever it may be? I re-sign Elfrid Payton, and then I re-sign Julius Randle. I said it yesterday on this program. These two guys bring you something, and Elfrid Payton obviously gives a damn, and he wants to be there, and he's performing at a high level. This guy can be your point guard. He's an unselfish player. He's not a score-first kind of point guard. That's just not his game. That was not Elford's game back at UL, okay? He was known more for his defense at UL. He could score, he could dish, but he was known for his defense. Good perimeter defender. I would re-sign him because you can re-sign him. People are going to be a little wary because he's been banged up all his career, but I think he wants to be here. He could have went other places after his contract ended with the Suns and he hit free agency. He opted to come to the Pels and sign a one-year deal. He obviously wants to be here. You see when he's healthy what type of production you're getting. 5 consecutive triple-doubles. If you have him run the point, Drew Holiday, top 5 player in this league, top 5 two-way player in this league, rather. He can play the 2. You re-sign Julius Randle. He can play the 3 or the 4, depending on what kind of offense, up-tempo offense you want to run. Oh, and now you're going to have a lottery pick to go with that. And you're going to have whatever you get from the Anthony Davis trade, whether that's a player like Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart, or whether that's just another lottery pick possibly from the New York Knicks. That sounds like a really good basketball team to me. Really good basketball team to me. I mean, just 5 triple-doubles. 5. And there's another thing. You gotta love the grit and the guts that the Pels are showing now with everything that's going on with Anthony Davis's minutes being regulated by the NBA and he is not playing a full game. Drew Holiday is on the mend. They've kind of basically shut him down. They're playing with a lot of guys that are going to be on G League rosters and guys that are fighting for a chance to make a roster in the NBA. A lot of these guys that are on the court, including Elfrid, they're fighting for a job. Okay, don't ever get that twisted. That's what they're doing. Our friend Andrew Lopez reported this last night. Mavericks had a 97.7% chance to win late in the fourth. And he says, so of course the Pels pulled out the W. Hell of a game by Kendrick Williams. Late steal. Frank Jackson had the late dagger. Julius Randle, by the way, who I mentioned, the Pels should make a priority to re-sign with Elfrid Payton. That should be 1-2. They should lock those guys up before anything happens. Any type of phone call is made about what to do with Anthony Davis. Julius Randle, you don't think he wants to be a Pels? You don't think he wants to continue to get a bigger contract and help this team win? He chipped in 30 points in a meaningless game. And, of course, Elfrid Payton had the triple-double. Late in the game, he needed 2 rebounds to get the 5th consecutive triple-double, and he was able to scoop them up. He also tied the franchise record. That's right. Not only does he get the 5 consecutive triple-doubles, which puts him in the rare air of Wilt and Oscar and Michael and Russ, Elfrid Payton also tied Chris Paul for the most triple-doubles in a season with 6. The Pels slash Hornets record was 6 in 1 season. That was done by Chris Paul back in the 2008-2009 season, back when they were still the Hornets. So he's on a list with Wilt, Russ, Oscar, Michael. He's also now tied a franchise record set by Chris Paul, perennial All-Star, probably Hall of Famer. There's still like 10 games to go, guys. The way he's playing, I think he can set the record and hold that record by himself for most triple-doubles in 1 season in Pelicans history. So big up to the former Raging Cajun, Elfrid Payton, still out there grinding, still doing a great job for the New Orleans Pelicans, overcoming those early season injuries, proving why he belongs on this roster and why he belongs in the NBA. And for me, he deserves to be a top priority for the Pels this offseason. So congrats to the former Raging Cajun. More Rap Game with RP3 live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open when we come back after this on 103.7 The Game.
Bob Dabalina.
Johnny throw, will he go? Let's see. Manziel with protection, throws, and touchdown! Alex Green, mark it down. Johnny Manziel's first Canadian Football League touchdown pass comes here in Montreal.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, broadcasting live here from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. We'll be broadcasting live here all week. The man, the myth, the legend himself, Cody Schutz, will be manning the ones and twos back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. What you just heard was a clip, one of the few highlights of Johnny Manziel's
So hard to find.
during Johnny's tenure there in the Canadian Football League. And that's because, well, Johnny didn't last long. He struggled. The man known for his money signs and his parties on yachts and hanging out with Gronk and dating Instagram models and drinking too much.
Well, basically he tried being an icon to all of us, essentially.
Yes, the Bro Hall of Fame.
Right.
Johnny Manziel's first ballot Bro Hall of
There's
Fame.
An entire wing dedicated to this cat.
Well, I don't know. A wing, now Gronk.
It is the Rob Gronkowski Bro Hall of Fame. His whole Hall of Fame. Yes.
All right.
You're correct.
Okay, there we go. Just make sure we got our data correct there.
I'll break out the Brocyclopedia on you. You don't want me to do that.
So Johnny flames out. CFL, the actual league itself, says he violated some type of part of their policy. His contract was very detailed and a lot of heavy lifting there if you try to dissect what the contract is. So he's looking to get his career back on track, and speculation has been for weeks that the money sign himself is, I guess he's now John. I wonder if he's no longer Johnny Football, if he's just John Football, if he's now more mature, is that he would sign with someone in the Alliance, the new spring football league that's been kind of taking off, getting positive reviews across the board. And sure enough, the Rap Game with RP3's preferred team in the Alliance, the Memphis Express, because of its association with several players from the Southeastern Conference, including a slew of LSU guys, has signed him. Now, he brings a little star power, but this means, Cody, that our boy, Meddy B, the Met Show, Zach Mettenberger, who injured his ankle on the first offensive possession in last week's game, and now he's injured and he can't play. This is what's forced the Memphis Express to sign him, to sign John Football. How do we feel? I'm going to give it to you, Cody. We are diehard Memphis Express fans for the last 5 weeks.
Choo-choo. That's what I'm saying. But somebody, first and foremost, has to block this Carter Schultz guy. You know, in the Alliance, he's the sack leader, and he has just been terrorizing offensive lines this season. And every, you know, talking head that you hear, whatever you check on, all are saying that you're going to be seeing Carter Schultz rush passers in the NFL probably next season. So that's the first thing. Somebody's got to block this guy, because that's the cat that came in and hit Mettenberger, causing the injury, starting this whole fiasco. Maybe. And the reason I say that's maybe, because I've also seen things and read stories that this is kind of a huge conspiracy deal from the Alliance pushing Johnny Manziel to Memphis, because Memphis is one of, if not the worst team, and it has the worst attendance out of all the teams. And so they're pushing Johnny Manziel to a bat.
Well, that's because we have yet to go to a game. I'm telling you, Cody, if you and I made a road trip and to go hang out and cheer on our Memphis Express.
Nobody circles the wagons like the rap game with RP3.
I mean, that alone would add two more people. So
double the crowd.
Yes. So the speculation is, you know, just to recap, you know, Johnny last played in the NFL in 2015. He was not very good in his 2 years with the Cleveland Browns. He landed with Montreal, the Alouettes. He had 5 touchdowns, 7 picks over 8 games. But in late February, he was suddenly cut by the Alouettes and subsequently barred from playing for any CFL team. We do not know the circumstances for his exile. What we do know is that the AAF decided to jump on Johnny before he could get scooped up by the XFL, who's going to be needing star power when they launch next year in the second, the XFL 2.0. But since, and here's an interesting thing that you're talking about, Cody. Since Manziel played in college at Texas A&M, the San Antonio Commanders of the Alliance actually had territorial rights on him for the Alliance. But they oddly relinquished those rights. And then the 1-5 Memphis Express had first dibs in the waiver process. And there's been speculation that the folks that run the Alliance told San Antonio, you're just going to go ahead and relinquish your rights to Johnny because we need him in Memphis to help with attendance and to help possibly this team win so we can have this franchise succeed in Memphis. So they'll be on their third quarterback when they take the field with Johnny Manziel. We know Christian Hackenberg was awful, awful, just terrible, just, as Charles would say, terrible. And then they gave way to Medi B, but Medi B suffered a left ankle injury on the first play against Salt Lake, the Stallions. They had this guy named Brandon Silvers replace Menberger. I don't know who that is. 23 of 37 for 242, touchdown and a fumble. So we'll see. I just – you're adding – the team is losing. They're 1-5. You're adding – John Football, and they're coached by Mike Singletary. Will this work out? I'm fascinated to see how it works out. We'll throw it up on the Twitter. Do you think John Football will succeed with the Memphis Express? You can go vote on that on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. When we come back, we're going to talk about Bebe down from the Bayou. Ed Orgeron got himself a new deal, media reports have. He's got himself a bonus and a bump in salary to coach the LSU football team. We'll dive into that more here on the Rap Game with RP3, broadcasting live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Louisiana Chittimacha Open.
What a great day for the Tigers.
Apparently, it is a great day to be a Tiger. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.7 The Game. I'm broadcasting live from Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Be here all week. The good brother Ben Love will be here in the afternoons as well. Cody Schutz is back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing, making sure we sound awesome. That little tidbit of sound, though, was LSU head football coach Ed Orgeron.
One team, one heartbeat.
Hold that taiga indeed. The Louisiana native, the man who sounds like the Cajun Cookie Monster. Terrific press conference guy, by far. One of the best. For having a comeback season, well, this last year was definitely LSU ascending back to being a national program. Again, after a few down years, after a few disappointments, his first full season as the head man, they lose to Troy at home. Remember, they got curb stomped by Mississippi State. It was an up and down season after he took over on the interim basis his first full year. Last year, his second full year, much better. They absolutely put a whooping. They took Georgia out to the woodshed. they mowed down, they beat Auburn in dramatic fashion. They take down Miami. They never got the turnover chain out of the box in that game held there at Jerry World in Arlington. Terrific season. Yes, they lost to Alabama. I understand that. They had that dramatic, controversial loss to A&M to end the regular season. But they get to a New Year's Six bowl game. They get to 10 wins. They win their bowl game. They get to 10 wins. They got a terrific team coming back. This team seems to play hard for Edo. They seem to love the fact that he crushes Red Bulls on his chest. I have not, for sure, I have not done enough in-depth reporting to find out if the Red Bulls are, in fact, still full of liquid when he does this.
We're going to get them.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get them. We'll deep dive into that, some investigative journalism there. But apparently the fine folks at LSU have decided that Ed Orgeron needs to get himself a pay raise and a contract extension. Multiple media reports, including 247 Sports, say that this contract extension and pay raise has been going on for a few months, the discussion for it. The proposed extension would keep Orgeron under contract until March of 2023. Okay, and this is according to NOLA.com's Brody Miller, friend of 103.7 The Game. It says in the story, the proposed contract would pay Edo $4 million a year, a 14% increase with $400,000 in added incentives. Orgeron's buyout would then increase to $10 million. So if LSU wants to buy him out, they don't want to have Edo smashing Red Bulls on his chest no more for the team, that it's going to cost them $10 million to buy him out. Now, that's what I call an insurance policy. The amount would decrease, though, $250,000 each month through March of 2021. Orgeron is currently making $3.5 million in base salary, and that could pop up to as much as $5 million if he hits certain incentive boosters laid out in the current deal. Also, safeties coach Bill Bush is also expected to receive a $50,000 a year pay raise with a one-year extension. Also, new passing game coordinator Joe Brady, who was brought in earlier this year, is also set to receive a three-year contract after coming over from the New Orleans Saints. That would pay him roughly $400K a year. Like I said, LSU's coming off a 10-3 season. Fiesta Bowl win over UCF on New Year's Day. They're currently going through spring practice. So what do you think, Acadiana? Do you feel that Ed Orgeron is deserving of such a significant pay raise and a contract extension? Or do you think maybe this year was just a fluke of sorts, that the amount of talent on the roster was able to propel the Tigers? Or do you think Edo is a critical part of that? We want to hear from you. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Call us up. Tell us what you think. We'll also throw it up on the Twitter. We'll put up a poll question. Do you think that Ed Orgeron deserves the pay raise slash contract extension that he is going to be receiving from the university? That is not finalized yet. I want to say that the Board of Supervisors will have a meeting on Wednesday, and they will vote on it. But from all reports, they will vote on this, and it will probably be unanimous to approve Ed O's contract extension and pay raise.
Raymond?
Yes, Cody.
I don't want to. Maybe I shouldn't reveal my sources here, but we did have someone call us up on the ARCO Equipment Hotline and fill us in with, he has inside information that Coach O from Lydia, I was told you would know where that's at.
I do.
Yes. Okay. So from Lydia to Baton Rouge, it is. Maybe it's one of those wives' tales. Maybe it's one of those legends precedes him. But the story goes from Lydia to the capital city, Coach O crushed 4 Red Bulls on that drive. This is a true story, or at least based on true events.
I believe it. The man downs it like it's water, okay?
My source was also wondering, he didn't have the answer to this, how Coach O's heart has not exploded yet. He did not have the answer to that question.
I don't understand a man that age that's that amped up that drinks that many Red Bulls, Cody, how he has not had a stroke.
Right. I mean, I went to high school with a kid who, like, before he would go work out after school or something, he would chug, like, not the small Red Bull, but the bigger can. He would chug that bigger can and then, like, smash it on his forehead and then, like, lay down on the bench and just start, you know, hitting reps. But, I mean, this kid was, like, 16, 17 years old. Not, I guess I assume Coach O's in his 50s.
That is correct.
That's I mean, by the time you turn 50, you should probably put down the Red Bull. But Coach O, he's a rare breed.
He is. That is exactly what he is. He is a rare breed. And look, I think, and I've said this before, and I know a lot of people have been critical. A lot of people were critical of the hire, okay, when it originally occurred. I understand that. They felt like they should have went through a more thorough coaching search, that Joe Oliva should have brought in someone with better credentials. And there's pros and cons for Edo. One, he's a terrific, excellent recruiter. He's been that way since he was an assistant for Jimmy Johnson back at the University of Miami when Miami was still the U, okay? When that meant something. He was there for Pete Carroll during those national championship runs, helping him recruit at USC, okay? The man's an excellent recruiter. He's a good, very good defensive line coach as well. So he's a great recruiter, good D-line coach, and he's a big motivator. The kids absolutely love playing for him. You talk to all these guys, whether it's been Danny Etling or any of the other guys like Greedy Williams that have gone through the draft process, and they go to the combine and they give these stories about Ed O. You know, they give these stories about Ed O, and they just love him. Like, he's like kind of like the big, burly, crazy uncle that they love, okay? So it works, and it works for right now. They needed a change of pace. They did. Les Miles had gotten still. I love Les. I loved covering Les more. I loved listening to Les Miles in press conferences. But they needed a change of pace. Things had gotten stale. They needed a change. So I think Ed is the guy right now that they need. Now, will Ed be the guy that gets them over the hump? Will Ed be the guy that gets them to beat Alabama? That gets them to win the SEC West? That gets them to win SEC championships and compete for college football playoff spots? I don't know. I don't know. And the other thing that's occurring right now is there's a power rising west of Baton Rouge, and that's in College Station. And I've said this before, and I know a lot of fans don't want to believe that. Jimbo Fisher, look at his recruiting class. Jimbo Fisher can recruit. Jimbo Fisher's won a national championship as a head coach. He's coached a Heisman Trophy winner. College Station is backing up the Brinks truck to make sure that they can be a winner there at Texas A&M. That's the team that could be develop into a rivalry, and that could be the coach and the program that prevents LSU from ascending to take over Alabama. But, look, anything can happen any given Saturday. So, do I think Ed O deserves the bump in pay? Yes. He's done a nice job. He took over on an interim basis. He kind of guided that ship. They had some rough patches last year, 2 years ago, rather. I understand that. People are still upset about the Troy loss. I get it. And upset about getting embarrassed by Mississippi State. I understand that. And you still have some diehard LSU fans that are like, well, he hasn't beat Alabama yet, and he's had three tries. That's all true. That's all true. But this is only a contract extension to 2023, $10 million buyout. LSU, look, LSU can afford to buy that out if they need be down the road. But it's a good – he's done a good enough job. They got to the New Year's Six bowl game last year. Rewards him. He's got an excellent staff. He's been able to retain Corey Raymond, New Iberia's own, the best defensive back coach in the country and the best DB recruiter. He's got a terrific recruiting class coming in. You reward him for this and see what happens in the next couple years. So, yes, I think Ed O deserves that. Now, will he hopefully be healthy enough to live throughout that contract? I don't know. Or is he going to pull a Peter Griffin and drink too much of the homemade Red Bull and then, you know, have a stroke?
What are you doing, Peter? I'm making my own Red Bull. Lois can't stop me from experiencing the manic highs and lows my body demands.
Whoa, hang on, you're adding kerosene? Peter, that's insane. That'll destroy your body.
Kerosene is fuel, Brian. Red Bull is fuel. Kerosene is Red Bull. Now, why don't you leave me alone while I'm doing my important work? Peter, that drink will kill you. Brian, whatever kills me makes me stronger. See, Brian? I feel great.
Peter, are you alive?
Yes.
Ah, you're alive. Okay, I won't eat you then. I was going to eat you.
So, yes, hopefully Edo, the LSU head football coach, won't end up like Peter Griffin and make his own homemade Red Bull.
Kerosene is fuel. Red Bull is fuel. Kerosene is Red Bull.
Red Bull. Classic.
It might take a little kerosene. I might have to ingest some kerosene if I'm going to, like, skydive out of, like, outer space. That's a thing Red Bull paid for. There's a good radio set. We don't have near enough time. That's a good podcast. All the crazy stunts Red Bull has paid for.
They could pay me to do that. I'd skydive.
Out of outer space? This dude jumped out of like a shuttle. It wasn't outer space, but whatever layer.
It wasn't outer space.
The stratosphere. You remember sixth grade science.
My man goes. He jumped out of outer space. Okay, it's not outer space.
I just saw Captain Marvel. I'm sorry. I'm feeling it.
Oh, man. But congratulations to Coach Ed O on his contract extension that will likely be approved tomorrow. So, but hey, make sure to go onto the Twitter account for 103.7 The Game. I'll retweet it as well from my personal account, RP3_sports. And do you think Coach Ed Orgeron deserved the pay raise / contract extension? You can also vote on our other poll questions, including will Johnny Manziel last with the Memphis Express? And do you think the New Orleans Pelicans should re-sign Elfrid Payton, the Raging Cajun great, Mr. Triple-Double himself this offseason? So make sure to go vote on those and tell your friends to vote. We will wrap up the first hour of the Rap Game with RP3 live right here from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open right here on 103.7 The Game. Study long, study wrong indeed. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, broadcasting live from the Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. We're going to close out the first hour with some breaking news that occurred overnight, or late last night, rather. The Sun Belt Conference is going to have a new leader, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. Dan Wolken reported late last night that Keith Gill from the A-10, the Atlantic 10 Conference, will be named the new Sun Belt Commissioner today, on Tuesday. Multiple sources have told USA Today Sports. Tim Buckley had also tweeted out last night that the Sun Belt, which has been looking for a new commissioner to replace Carl Benson, who's helped guide the Sun Belt to some great heights, including the expansion of bowl berths, automatic bowl tie-ins, all the way up to 5. That's happened under his watch, and he's handled realignment as well. That was all under Carl Benson's watch. But the Sun Belt Conference will hold an official teleconference today, Tuesday, March the 19th, at noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central. So the Sun Belt's going to unveil their new commissioner. Also, interesting tidbit, Keith Gill will be the first ever African-American commissioner of an FBS league. Now, let that wash over you, ladies and gentlemen. It's 2019, and Mr. Gill is going to become the first African-American commissioner of an FBS league. That means that we've never had a commissioner that is an African-American being the commissioner of the SEC, the Big 12, the Big 10, the ACC, the Pac-12, the Mountain West, the MAC, the Sun Belt, the American. None of those. Surprising. When I saw that, I was like, really? And I was like, well, I guess so. So congratulations to Keith Gill from the Atlantic 10. He's going to become, by reports, multiple reports, he will be named the new Sun Belt Commissioner later today, becoming the first African-American commissioner of an FBS league. So congratulations to him. And congratulations to the Sun Belt Conference being at the forefront of this and breaking ground, trailblazing a little bit here, being the first to accomplish said feat. So congratulations to both soon-to-be-named Commissioner Gill and the Sun Belt Conference. First hour, we have talked about Elfrid Payton recording his fifth consecutive triple-double, putting him in the company of Wilt Chamberlain, Oscar Robertson, Russell Westbrook, and Michael Jeffrey Jordan. He's also tied the number of triple-doubles in a season of six. The franchise record was held by Chris Paul from 2008 to 2009. Elfrid Payton has tied that, and he has 10 games to break that and hold the record himself. We've also asked you to go vote on our Twitter poll question, one of three. Does Elfrid Payton need to be a priority for the New Orleans Pelicans this offseason? Should they re-sign the former Raging Cajun star? I say yes. What do you say? Go vote. We also talked about John Football. That's right. Johnny Manziel getting not a second chance or a third chance, but pretty much a millionth chance to succeed as a professional quarterback. The former Texas A&M Heisman Trophy winner, first-round draft pick of the Cleveland Browns, flamed out after 2 years, tried to get his life and career in order with the CFL. He was up and down in Montreal. He was dropped from his contract and barred from playing in the CFL, so now he's landed with the Alliance, which, despite some positive reviews, is needing a little star power. He lands with the Memphis Express after our boy, Zach Medenberg, the Met Show, Meddy B, injured his ankle and is likely out for the rest of the season. So Johnny Manziel will get another chance to be a professional quarterback, but he'll have to do it with Mike Singletary, so not really for sure. As much as I love Singletary, he's one of my favorite players of all time. That man is not a good coach. But we'll see. We'll see if Johnny Manziel can get things going for the Memphis Express and for himself. And we also dived deep into Ed Orgeron getting a reported contract raise and extension. There we go. There we go. Breaking in that new tongue today. So you can vote on all three of those topics on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Coming up this next hour, we're jam-packed with guests, ladies and gentlemen. We got Corey Diaz coming up. He covers the Grambling State Tigers for the Monroe News Star. He's going to talk to us about the Tigers getting ready for this week for postseason basketball. They're in the College Insider Tournament, the CIT. Then right after that at 7:32, Adam Hunsucker, also from the Monroe News Star, will help us break down ULM. They're in the CIT as well. They're hosting a game. And then we'll close out the show with the legend himself, the voice of the STM Cougars, and Mr. Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Danny Jones will join us live right here on site. So stay tuned. We got to go to a break. This is the Wrap Game with RP3, live at Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for like locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
The one thing I think that helps us is you look at our schedule, our non-conference schedule prepared us for our conference schedule. I think playing playing Florida State on the road in the Orlando tournament, that neutral site game, playing there, playing Oklahoma State, playing those teams there, that helped us kind of prepare us for what we're going to be facing. Then obviously playing us at Houston, that same area. So we play different styles in non-conference. And obviously our conference, we play teams with different styles in our conference. So that really helps you, I think, playing the SEC, prepare for any type of style of play that you're going to come up against.
Welcome to the second hour of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, broadcasting live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, site of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. That, ladies and gentlemen, was LSU's interim head coach talking about how his team is ready for the NCAA tournament. The Tigers got the 3 seed in the East Regional. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, how it's a formidable regional. You know, this is a team that was almost a 2 seed, and they get placed in the top overall seed for the entire tournament in the Duke Blue Devils. That's the 1 seed in that regional region. Oh, and also the best number 2 seed in the entire tournament is also in that region as well, in Michigan State, the Big Ten regular season and tournament champion. Didn't do them any favors by putting them there as a 3 seed. But as Tony Benford was discussing, this team has played on the road considerable amount, and just not in SEC play. They played that game against St. Mary's, which they won. That was on a neutral site there in Vegas. They also played in the Advocare Invitational there in Florida. That's when they nearly beat Florida State, lost to them in overtime, and lost to Oklahoma State in the third-place game in that little tournament. So this is a team, at this point of the season, they're a veteran bunch, okay? So they know how to play on the neutral side. So we also talked yesterday with our good friend Jarrett Rozier of Tiger Details. And he said, like, you know, there's a lot of comparisons to this team in that 2016. That's the last team from LSU to reach the Final Four. That was the Big Baby Davis, Tyrus Thomas team. They also started off in Jacksonville, which is where LSU will start off on Thursday. Okay? Thursday, they're going to be taking on Yale, the 14th seed, the Ivy League tournament champions. They're in the opening round of the NCAA tournament. You can listen to pregame live right here on 103.7 The Game on Thursday. Pregame show starts at 11. Tip will be around 11:30, 11:35. You can also hang out with me out at Twin Peaks watching the game live there, representing 103.7 The Game. So make sure to do that. Just take an extended lunch break. Or just say that you have a dentist appointment. I've used that in the past. It works. That's a helpful tip.
And you get, I believe, if I am not mistaken, which I am not, the special on Thursday for hanging out with you is like buy 6 wings and you get 6 free. So, I mean, lunch is even cheaper than normal, plus Tiger Hoops, plus RP3. Yes, I am selling. Yes.
Yes, yes. What is not to love in that scenario? I'm just saying.
And don't worry. I got a good feeling. If you don't think you can handle 12 wings for some reason, or if you're bringing the kids or something like, Raymond's got your back. Don't worry. I only made that joke because you can't get to me right now.
That's okay. I mean, your boy's trying to be on a diet. That's fine. That's fine.
We'll get him not breaded. We'll get him, you know, just naked. It'll be fine.
That's fine. I mean, that is the role I have in my own household, that I finish everyone else's plate.
Right. They try.
Like my wife has done that for years, you know. She's like, I've ate too much. I can't finish. I'm finishing. Because I'm not one to waste food, which is why I'm, you know, I used to be called Three Bills. So I'm not one to waste food. Well, now my daughter does the same thing, Cody.
Crushing.
She looks to me and she goes, Daddy, I need you to finish this. I'm done.
Yes, indeed.
And I'm like, Well, that does look delicious. That's terrific. I like, yeah, yeah. So.
Well, you heard it here first. You can go have RP3 finish your wings at Twin Peaks on Thursday. go enjoy.
But we will have fun, so make sure to come out and join us on Thursday. And then Ben Love will be out there from 6 to 8 on Friday as well at Twin Peaks on Johnston. So make sure to hang out with him as well. If you, and I don't think Ben's going to finish your food. So
no, probably not.
Yeah, if you don't want someone eyeing you down for some of your extra wings or French fries, just you may want to go hang out with Ben on Friday instead. So, but LSU, it's interesting. I'm interesting to see how this team responds because, and you give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline if you want to chime in about LSU's matchup. Do you feel that it was unfair for them to get the 3 seed in the region of death, so to speak? And do you think they have a legit chance of getting even to the Sweet 16 where they would likely face Michigan State? And you give us a call, 337-706-0111.
I mean, you brought up that they would probably face Michigan State in that Sweet 16. I mean, Michigan State, the 2 seed, they're playing Bradley in the opening round. I mean, I guess anything can happen, right? But no, Michigan State wins that game.
Every then, media member in the country is rooting for Michigan State in that matchup, by the way. Right.
But then their second round matchup, which what I'm still going to call the second round, is Louisville or Minnesota. Probably Louisville being the higher seed, but I just don't see anything tripping up Michigan State on their way to the Sweet 16. Whereas LSU, we know they play Yale in the opening round, and then they will have either Maryland, Belmont, or Temple in the second round. So I don't see, knock on wood, I don't see too many speed bumps for the Tigers or Sparty getting to the Sweet 16. But then at that point, yikes. I mean, I know we'll have two more games. We'll have watched each team play, so we'll have something more to build off of, you know, to discuss that
right.
game. But still, I mean, that's something
the only,
that is worrisome for the Tigers.
The only concern I have on that, Cody, in twofold. Louisville could be dangerous. That is a team that kind of roughed up North Carolina, if I am correct. And North Carolina is a 1 seed. So
right.
Louisville can be dangerous when they're on. But, you know, to come tournament time, Tom Izzo, look, he knows how to coach his guys up. They always make the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. So I would still favor Michigan State in that matchup. But once again, March Madness, anything can happen. As for the Tigers, I agree with you. But Yale does have some comparisons to Florida and how they play. I still think LSU can take care of business. My only concern for the Tigers is not the talent. I think they're going to be the more talented team in the first and second rounds that they'll face. My concern is, will Coach Tony Benford be able to make those late game adjustments? And I saw it firsthand, and this is not a knock on Tony by any stretch of the imagination, because he was placed into a difficult spot. Will Wade would routinely know when to take timeouts late in the game, and they needed some timeouts taken late in that game against Florida at the SEC tournament in Nashville, and they didn't come. And Will Wade's steady hand, how much will the Tigers miss that? Regardless of how you feel about him and how he's handling everything and what he's done or what he's speculated to do or alleged to do, that's beside the point. Will did have a steady hand with his team. He knew his team, and he knew when to calm them down and when to call a timeout. His steady hand could have been used there at the Bridgestone Arena to kind of get Tremont Waters to refocus, who did not play well in the second half of that game. Okay, so if things get tight versus Yale on Thursday, will they be able to overcome that? Will Coach Benford be able to handle that, and will the guys on the court, Skylar Mays and Nas Reed, Cavell Bigby Williams, will they be able to handle the pressure of being in that spot? Because they did not handle the pressure of being at the SEC tournament, and they got bounced. They were one and done.
Now, I heard Jordy Holtberg claim earlier.
The Blob Bomber.
Right, right.
Yes.
I guess it was last week. It was after the SEC tournament where LSU did lose, where he, you know, was very adamant in the fact that Will Wade would not have gotten teed up in that scenario that
That's
Tony
correct.
Benford did, just because
That's
of interim head coach, blah, blah, you get the situation. So there's that whole layer of it as well, because, you know, referees are people, you know, when I even just umpiring little girl softball, I was just a guy out there calling, like, you know, things affect you one way or another, whether you think you're letting them affect you or not, that's irrelevant. You know, as a person, you're going to see this guy who is not a head coach, and you're just not going to take as much, you know, of anything from him as you would a quote unquote, you know, normal head coach or whatever you want to say. So there's just a lot of layers that if LSU is caught in a tight game late, I'm going to start getting a little hot under the collar.
Right. That's my number one concern for them reaching the Sweet 16. It has nothing to do with talent. It has nothing to do with what they can do defensively, offensively. They have the talent to advance to their fifth Final Four in program history. That goes without saying. My concern is without Will Wade, and not that he's going to serve as the distraction, but without Will Wade, are they going to be able to handle the pressure pack situation that's going to be facing them if that game versus Yale is tight? And mind you, Yale, they're not going to be scared of LSU. They're going to look at LSU as being vulnerable, first of all. And Yale knocked off a higher seed before. That was 2 years ago or 3 years ago, 2016, I do believe, when they knocked off a Baylor, okay, and then advanced to the second round where they lost to Duke. So this is not going to be a cakewalk by any stretch of the imagination. So the Tigers will need to be focused, and the Tigers will need to not play tight, and Coach Benford will have to not let his emotions get the better of him. If they can do that, they can advance to the Sweet 16, and then we'll see what happens. If they can't, it's going to be an early exit for the LSU Tigers. We'll dive more into that as the week progresses, but up next, we're going to head up north. Bring on our good friend, Corey Diaz from the Monroe News Star. He's going to help us talk Grambling State Tigers basketball. They're in the CIT right here on the Wrap Game with RP3 live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open here on 103's 7 The Game. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, broadcasting live here from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. We've talked LSU hoops to start here the second hour. They're going to be facing off against Yale on Thursday. Pre-game show can be heard here live at 11 o'clock, tip around 11:35. Right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. But they're not the only set of Tigers from the state of Louisiana that have postseason basketball to play this week. Grambling State, who were able to post a winning season, they accepted a berth into the CollegeInsider.com tournament, the CIT. And they will be traveling to UT Rio Grande on Wednesday for the first round game in the CIT. We're going to talk more about Grambling State's season and this week's matchup for the postseason with our good friend Corey Diaz from the New Star. Corey, how are you this morning, brother?
RP3, how's it going, man? I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Let's talk a little bit about this team. I know that the women's basketball team has gotten a considerable amount of pub because they got Miss Quadruple Double on the roster, and she had herself a hell of a season being named Player of the Year. But the men's team had themselves a pretty good season as well. Give us a brief recap of what the Tigers were able to accomplish this year, brother.
You know, they secured a top four seed heading into the SWAC tournament, you know, which means they, you know, the way SWAC handles their tournament, you know, top four seeds host their first round game, you know, on campus. And I think this is the third year that they've done that. So this was the first time ever that Grambling was ever able to host, you know, a SWAC tournament game on campus. Cause you know, last year due to APR issues and academic sanctions that the NCAA handed down, you know, they weren't eligible to play in the postseason. So they, you know, that was another first. You know, Dante Jackson, the head coach, it's only his second year, but, you know, he's done a lot of things just in a very short period of time. You know, last year they won, you know, the regular season conference championship, but and then that was the end of their season because they couldn't go to the postseason, couldn't play in the SWAC tournament or anything after that. So So another first for them. But, you know, coming off of that regular season conference championship that they won last year in Dante's first year, they had high expectations. You know, they thought that they were good enough to get a one seed or maybe a two seed at the lowest and into the SWAC tournament and really have a legitimate shot of winning that thing. And so they didn't quite meet their expectations that they had set for themselves. You know, they had a lot of pieces coming back from last year, you know, led by the point guard, Ivy Smith Jr., who once again led the team in scoring this year with almost 14 points a game. And, you know, he's really good. He's really consistent, you know, night in, night out. You know, you kind of know what you're going to get from him. And he knew he was going to need, you know, just another scoring option or two, and went out and got a transfer, Dallas Polk Hilliard, who ended up being the second leading scorer for this team and, you know, added a lot of athleticism and you know, more of a threat, you know, on the perimeter. And so, you know, it's kind of been a bit of an inconsistent year for Grambling State's men's basketball team. You know, they felt like they could have done better. You know, they felt like they were set up to do a little bit better. But, you know, at the end of the day, they got to the semifinals in the SWAC tournament, played in Birmingham for the first time since the tournament was moved there from Houston. And so there's a lot to, you know, there's a lot for Grambling State to hang their hat on. Obviously, this, the CIT is their first postseason appearance in 39 years. So kind of another, almost another pseudo first for Dante Jackson and his Tigers. So, you know, they're really excited about the game on Wednesday, and, you know, they're playing Rio Grande Valley, who they played last year there at their place, beat them by 6, 82-76. So, you know, this team, that while it's been an inconsistent year, they're actually very confident going into their first-round CIT game on Wednesday.
We're on with Corey Diaz, Monroe News Star. He covers Grambling State and Louisiana Tech for that publication. Tell us a little, you know, you said 39 years, you know, Grambling's had some good players over the years. Why has it been so long? I mean, that's four decades there, Corey, since they've been able to take part in a postseason tournament. I know Grambling is known nationwide and worldwide as a football program due to the late, great Eddie Robinson, but they've had some talented guys come through there. Why such the long stretch?
Yeah, you know, Grambling, you know, obviously follows the recipe for a lot of your, you know, a lot of your low major, smaller schools, you know, a non-conference. You know, they like to play a lot of money games. You know, they'll go, you know, they'll go play the Wisconsins, you know, and the Louisvilles, and they'll take their lumps and bruises non-conference play. So, you know, you're not looking at a lot of wins in your non-conference slate. And once you get into SWAC play, you know, it's, you know, this year, looking at this year just specifically, I know you've asked me historically, but, you know, this year, you know, I've kind of studied, you know, the SWAC teams and you know, just kind of going back the last 3-4 years. And really, I think this year the SWAC was the strongest it had been. And in recent memory, you know, Prairie View A&M, you know, won the conference and they're playing in the NCAA tournament. You know, it's been the first time that the men's team for them has won the tournament, you know, in a while, and it's gotten to this point. You know, Texas Southern's usually been that team, you know, especially in recent memory, that's kind of been, you know, Texas Southern goes up to Oregon early in the year and beats them. So, you know, the league was really, really tough this year, but, you know, that kind of parlays back into where I was going historically in that. You know, Grambling, you know, like you said, like you've mentioned, they've had some guys roll through that's, you know, gone on and played some, you know, professional ball, you know, overseas. And, you know, they've had some talented guys. But, you know, I think they didn't really have the right coach in place for a number of years. And, you know, sometimes the institution maybe doesn't have you know, the money set aside in their budget to maybe go play in one of these smaller tournaments. I know these smaller tournaments haven't been around for very long, but, you know, their last postseason appearance, 1980, was the NIT, lost by 2 to Ole Miss. You know, that was when, you know, Fred Hobdy was the coach. And obviously, you know, that's the namesake on Grambling's arena now. So, but, yeah, it's, you know, Grambling just hasn't, I don't think they've had the right coaching staff in place, but I think they've, with Dante Jackson and his staff, you know, I think they've got the structure in their program now that these kids, once they get on campus, whether it's recruiting visits or they officially come and decide that Grambling's going to be the place they want to play, you know, I really think the kids already know what to expect from him, and they know what he's going to ask for from them. And as we've been able to see over the last, just in the last 2 years, I think Grambling State men's basketball program is really starting to put things together.
And you talked about the job that he's done. I mean, then, you know, Joseph Price was coaching the team when Jones first got on board as an assistant. The team went 5-24, and when you had reported this earlier this week, Sean Walker took over for Price, and the next season the Tigers won just 2 games. And then the third year he only won 7 games. What has it been that Jackson's been able to do that's been able to turn kind of things around?
You know, honestly, you know, I've spent a lot of time with Dante over the last couple of years since he took over the program July of 2017. And, you know, it's going to maybe sound a little strange, you know, from the athletic performance side, but, you know, he really started in the classroom on the academic side of things. Obviously, you know, he took over a program that was dealing with APR stuff, and you know, he really wanted to find guys that obviously could play, you know, on the court, but also handle their business in the classroom. And he's added, I think right now on his roster, there's only 2 guys that he did not recruit over the last 2 years. You know, the other 13 are guys that he had brought in, guys that he knew that were going to fit his mold. And, you know, and that's how it's really started. And then once he got the guys in that he knew were going to be academically good for him, he also knew that what he was going to be getting athletically was going to fit his, you know, his scheme. You know, he's very up tempo. He wants to push, which means you've got to have a very good point guard. And Ivy Smith Jr. is that guy. You know, Ivy was a first team All SWAC selection. This year he was a second team. Like I said, he's led the team in scoring the last 2 years. You really have to have a very consistent point guard that you can night in, night out, know that he's going to deal for you. And Ivy's kind of been that most important piece. And then, you know, this after the first recruiting cycle he had, which he only had 2 months to fill, you know, he came back this year with a full year, you know, had a little more time to evaluate a lot of different players. And, you know, he kind of knew he needed some more help on the perimeter and needed some bigger bodies inside. Because when he took over, I think the tallest guy on Grambling State's men's basketball team was 6'6". Well, this year they've got 4 guys that are 6'7" or taller. So it's actually been a really remarkable job to just kind of watch him just in this short period of time, know what he needed, actually go out and find it, because, you know, that's a big problem, especially in basketball recruiting. You might know what you need, but it's kind of hard to get these kids to come and play for you. But he's been able to do that as well. And then it's just a matter of, you know, coaching the kids up and also not coach them, you know, in a way that's, you know, keeping them from doing what they want to do. So it's been, you know, coach them, but also, you know, go out there and let them make plays too, because they've been doing this, you know, their whole lives and been wanting to play college basketball their whole lives. So that's how they've got to this point. So it's been really remarkable, and it's been a really fun turnaround to watch these last 2 years.
Corey, appreciate you coming on, brother. We're up on the break. Enjoy the tournament, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, thanks, RP3. Appreciate you.
Corey Diaz, Monroe News Star, breaking down Grambling State men's basketball. After the break, we'll have Adam Hunsucker on from the News Star talking ULM hoops right here on the Wrap Game with RP3, live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club in Broussard. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, broadcasting live here from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. The Wrap Game can't get enough of our fine folks there up on the I-20 corridor. We just had Corey Diaz on from the Monroe News Star, breaking down Grambling State's CIT appearance. Now we're going to head back out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on fellow News Star reporter extraordinaire, the one and only Adam Hunsucker, to break down ULM being in the CIT. Adam, how are you this morning, brother?
Not too bad, Ray. How about yourself? Good to be back on down your way.
Well, I appreciate you making time for us, as always, man. I know you're a busy man. Let's talk a little bit about the ULM Warhawks. Winning season this year. They had some very nice moments. They get to be in the postseason, get to host a postseason game in the CIT later this week. Give us a brief recap of their season and if it lived up to the expectations that was put on the team in the preseason.
Well, I think, sure. I mean, anytime you have a winning season and get the postseason play at ULM, have a chance to win 20 games, we'll see how this CIT goes. You're definitely meeting expectations. But kind of a double-edged sword with this team, though, because you go back and look at some of those losses, particularly those 4 1-point losses on the road, and it makes you wonder, you know, what could have been with this team, because you have a guy like Deshaun Smith, who was a transcendent player in this year, just came up just short of the scoring title, and then Travis Munning's a 4-year starter who, you know, after a slow start, really came around and into his own this year. And you know, I tip off on Thursday, he's going to be the new program record holder for most games played. So in a way, yes, expectations are met, winning season's all that good. I mean, you kind of wonder what could have been, but at the end of the day, I mean, at a program like this, playing postseason is always a big deal, and especially being at home. The last two, they had to go on the road, so they're excited about their chances.
The ULM Warhawks host Kent State out of the MAC in the opening round of the CollegeInsider.com tournament Thursday, 7 p.m. there at Fant Ewing Coliseum. Let's talk a little bit about the, you know, it's a big deal for them to host. What is the Warhawk community, so to speak, Adam? How excited are they about having some postseason basketball? I know it's the CIT, but it still gives the opportunity for the Warhawks to continue playing this season. What's the fan base feeling like about having a home game here for the CIT?
Yeah, they're excited about it. I mean, more another chance to watch these teams that they've really, you know, really taken to, the fans and the community this year. And coming out supporting ULM was about third in attendance in the Sun Belt, which is, you know, a really good year for them in that regard, too. And, you know, it should make for a good atmosphere. I know folks had their fingers crossed hoping, when, as did I, that we'd get a ULM Grambling rematch in round one. But you know, that wasn't in the card. It's the CIT is the one who makes that decision. But so who knows? We might see that down the road, depending on how both teams do. But for now, Kent State's coming in here, and they've got 22 wins. They're a pretty good team from all indications. And you know, we'll see what the atmosphere looks like. I know the coaches are excited, particularly Keith Richard, who actually went and bought 500 student tickets, and he's going to be handing those out for first come, first serve on Thursday. Try to get as many people in there as they can.
Oh, wow. 500 tickets. Nice. Let's talk. Tell me a little bit about the job Coach has done this year. I mean, this program has seemingly been on an upswing the last couple of seasons. Break down, what has he been able to do that other coaches in the past may have not been able to do there, Adam?
Well, the first thing about Keith Richard is he understands the job and the landscape of it. I mean, he was a former player at ULM. He was the point guard on the first ever NCAA tournament team in 1982, and he was an assistant there for Mike Bynning during the Golden Era, where they went to 4 straight NCAA tournaments. So you're talking about a guy who went to school there, has coached there as an assistant, and then coming back as a head coach. You're not going to get that kind of familiarity a lot of times when you see these hires around the country. But he knows the job, he knows what it takes to be successful there, and he's really applied that with, you know, what ULM is now as opposed to NLU back then, and really found their niche in recruiting. And you see that in, you know, the guys they've been able to bring in here. You know, they got Travis Munnings 4 years ago. He was a 4-year starter for them. Michael Lertle comes down here from the Indianapolis area, and he will also end up being a 4-year starter unless something bad happens. And then you've got Deshaun Smith, who they picked up from Wichita State, who came out of nowhere to be one of the best players in this league. And I remember all last year, Keith telling me that Deshaun was the best player on the team, and he was sitting out the transfer rules. And sure enough, he was right. And you know, it's just a combination you rarely see anymore in college sports, regardless of the sport today. You've got a guy who's, you know, spent most of his career at one school and understands that school and has really, and it's really paid off for both of them.
We're on with Adam Hunsucker of the Monroe News Star. Adam, tell me a little bit about this matchup. What have you been able to figure out? They're taking on a team out of the MAC in Kent State. What do you know about Kent State? What kind of challenges do they present the Warhawks on Thursday?
Well, it's funny. You look at the teams, they're kind of mirror images of each other. You know, Kent State has one dynamic scorer, just like ULM does, and Jalen Walker, who led their team in scoring despite being suspended twice this year. So that's an impressive feat in and of itself. You look at Kent's resume, they beat Buffalo, who's in the NCAA tournament. They beat Toledo, who won the MAC West Championship. And they also beat Vanderbilt. And I know Vanderbilt was garbage this year, but still, I mean, anytime you're going to play a power school, there's going to be a certain talent differential there. And, yeah, that's a good win for them. They actually hung with Louisville for a little while. So, I mean, this is, you know, a battle-tested team. They're very balanced in their scoring. They've got four starters in double figures, just like ULM does. So, I think it's going to come down to which of those two guards, either Jalen Walker or Deshaun Smith, has the bigger night. And you know, it should be good for ULM considering, you know, they're going to be at home and they're 13-2 at Fant UN Coliseum this year.
Do you expect the crowd? You said third in attendance in the Sun Belt this year, which is impressive. Up in Monroe. What do you expect? Do you expect a good crowd? I mean, look, the NCAA tournament's going to be going on at the same time, you know, throughout the day. But do you still expect to be a decent crowd on Thursday night there inside Fant Ewing?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, yeah, the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is an event. There's no question about it. I'll be watching myself. But as we both know, in this state, I guess not the most basketball learned state, I guess you would say. I don't have much factor into the crowd for the people that want to be there. I think you'll see a good three or four thousand people there, which would be outstanding. Just because, like I said, you know, there's just kind of this vibe this team's been able to build, just not with the university community, but just with the community at large. And people like going out there to watch them. And that's the thing about basketball in the South, for outside of the Carolinas or Kentucky, when you're talking about, you know, more football dominant areas. If you give them something to go watch, some kind of a show in basketball, they'll go and watch it, and I think that'll be the case Thursday night.
Adam, let's switch over to the gridiron. Spring football is going on across the nation and across the state. What are some interesting storylines involving the Warhawks football team there? Matt Viator has been there now a couple of years trying to establish his culture, trying to establish developing a winning tradition there for a program that's, you know, been up and down and has had a lot more lows than ups in recent years. What are some storylines going on there with spring football for the Warhawks?
Well, you know, it's kind of an odd feeling around there right now with everything that's going on, because as we all know, last year was supposed to be the year ULM played in a bowl. They were picked to finish second in the Sun Belt West. And they did get the bowl eligibility, but were left out with the four other 6-6 teams. So now it's kind of picking up the pieces and moving on and seeing what they can do this year. You look up the top, you know, you got Caleb Evans coming back at quarterback. He had kind of an up and down season. They're trying to get some more consistency out of him. And, you know, the other side of it, see if the defense can put together a full year, because, you know, they had their moments where they played as well as any defense in the Sun Belt, and other moments where they were as bad as any defense in the country. So I'd say finishing and consistency are the two big buzzwords going on around Malone Stadium right now as we get into spring practice. And then, you know, you've got some junior college additions that the coaches are excited about that they're trying to get factored in, particularly Kilo Sweeney, who's a safety that they were actually able to hold off Troy and sign, who should, you know, step into the starting lineup immediately. And you got some defensive linemen that are going to get some opportunities this spring with a couple of suspensions going on. So it's just kind of an odd kind of deal out there right now. You're in year four, and you know that bowl probably would have you know helped the program take another step. Not that they're not moving in the right direction, but you know I think you might be a little restless out there among the fans right now.
Adam, I appreciate you as always making time for us, brother. I know you're immensely busy. Enjoy the game on Thursday night, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Absolutely, anytime.
Adam Hunsucker, Monroe News Star, covers the ULM Warhawks, breaking down some hoops in football for us. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, we'll have the one and only Danny Jones, executive director of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, joining us live right here at Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club in Broussard here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parse III. We're broadcasting live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in lovely Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. We'll be broadcasting here all week as well. Ben Love, our good brother for Bumper to Bumper Sports, will be here in the afternoons as well. So, Media Day is going to be today. Tournament play starts on Thursday. We'll go through Sunday here for the Web.com tour event. And now we're going to be joined to help us preview and tell us a little bit about this year's tournament. It's the one and only. You know him as the voice of the STM Cougars, the state championship Cougars. He's also the executive director of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. It's our good friend, Danny Jones. Danny, welcome to the show, brother. How are you this morning?
Tired. Does that count? Is it too early in the week to be tired? It's, you know, As a tournament director, there's a bad misconception that tournament week is just brutal. And while the first couple of days are long, advance week is that's when it all happens. You know, I tell people, I go, man, you got to be getting ready. I'm like, no, if we're not ready now, we're in trouble. And that's last Friday by 5, pretty much. And at that point, it's putting out fires. And I guess I was a full-time fireman yesterday.
Well, I can imagine, brother. Just tell us a little bit about just the massive undertaking. I know people come out here, they enjoy the tournament. I've been covering it for years, and it's I'll say this just as a total compliment to you. You know, I've covered PGA Tour events like the Shell Houston Open, and this is comparable to what you guys do here. But I know it's a massive undertaking getting the grandstands right, fencing off, getting everything from – you know, concessions, everything. There's a lot of moving pieces here, making sure you have spots for the golfers to come in. Just how massive an undertaking and how long does it take for you guys? When do you guys start preparing for this?
Well, this is really something, you know, we're an office staff of two. We have gotten some operational help the first 3 months off of grant in January, February, March, which has made life not easier. It's made it better. You know, everybody asks me what my normal day is. And I say, I don't know, because I can have a day planned out, and by 9 o'clock, it's all changed. and it just goes there. You know, there's a lot that goes into this. I used to come to this event as a kid. In fact, my sophomore and junior year, I was a caddy out here. Those were the early days of the Louisiana Open. And to see it grow from when I started 18 years ago, that's the crazy thing. You know, I get to do the radio interviews, and I guess I'm the face of the organization. But this event has a massive team behind it. A board of directors, a tournament board of 50-plus that you see doing things to prepare for this tournament and the week of this tournament that they may not do at their own house. And people put their personal feelings aside, and it's all for the good of the tournament. And then at the end of the day, what's the reason we do this? It's for the charities that benefit from this event. We're going to go over $5 million in charitable contributions since we started this event this year, barring some major catastrophe. I don't even see that happening. We're right over 4.85, and last year we were right at just shy of 200,000 that we gave away to charity. So I see us going over that $5 million mark this year. You know, some PGA Tour events give a couple million dollars a year. They're also operating on a budget 15 times our size.
Right.
You know, the money is the biggest difference between the PGA Tour and the Web.com Tour, and I guess you could trickle that down. But when you look at what this community does, and I say that, you know, I feel like a broken record sometimes because I always talk about Lafayette being a special place. You know, I graduated from the University of Texas. I lived in Austin, which I think is one of the greatest cities in America. But I tell people I've had the fortunate opportunity to live in two of the greatest cities in America. And I truly believe that because I think Lafayette and the Acadiana area, the people just get it. You know, we use that term "it" in sports so many times, but Lafayette gets it. And I don't know how to describe it.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that I noticed since covering the event, a few years ago is that, you know, all the stories of how much the golfers enjoy being here and the hospitality, whether it's, you know, walking the course and there's food everywhere or the fact that a good portion of these young men that are trying to, you know, make it as a professional golfer, they get, you know, they're staying. They're not staying at hotels, a lot of them. They're staying right here in Lafayette, in Acadiana, and people are just willing to open up their homes and let them have here because they're taking part in the tournament. I think there's this abundance of hospitality here that's associated with the tournament, and it's got that reputation now on tour.
There's people that aren't from here, they don't get it.
Right.
We're back to that it word.
Right, right.
You know, there's a reason that people say there's a difference between the people up north and the people down here. And I believe it because I live it every day. I try to be, you know, a positive part of it every day. But this, you know, I love my job. This is a humbling task because to see people come together for it. Look, I mean, you just look here, you know, you got Acadian Ambulance here. You got Delta Media here. You got Cox Communications. I mean, you see different organizations. Look, we don't display people's logo because we're paying them to. They come out here because they want to be a part of the event. They're donating product to us or some sort of service, they're sponsoring with their money. The people that come out here to volunteer, you know, I tell people all the time, the lifeblood of this tour, people can say what they want, is volunteers. Because we can have all the money we want, but if we have zero volunteers, we're gonna struggle big time to succeed. Now, the flip side is we can have all the volunteers and no money, and we're going to struggle, but you need both. And so that's when I tell people, listen, you can't write a major check. You can't write a $5,000 check, a $20,000 check to support an event like this. But come out and volunteer and be a part of it because now you're donating your time, which is just as valuable as the money that, you know, some organization, you know, some corporate company may put up to put this event on. So you may call it your little piece and your 5 hours of time, but it's a major piece of the puzzle when you talk about this tournament being able to generate $200,000 a year for charity the last 14 years on average. And look, it's not just the charitable impact. This is a huge economic impact for Lafayette and the Acadiana area. It's notoriety to our area. There's only 26 events worldwide on the web.com tour this year. Yep. And Lafayette, Louisiana has done it. Not only have we done it, I feel like we've done it well, and we've done it for a long, long time. We've done it for 28 years. This being year 28, we've got a press conference, as you know, at 10 o'clock this morning, and we've got a major announcement with the PGA Tour that we're excited about. Somebody said, well, is it bad news? I said, I'm never excited about bad news. So, you know,
why would anyone be excited? Yeah, guys, I'm really amped up. I'm pumped up to give you some negative news this morning.
But it's, you know, and I'm tired this morning. And so I'm just kind of reflecting on the week already. But it's just a humbling job that I have. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be the face of an organization that I think means so much to so many and gives back to so many in this community. A couple of years ago when the economy was bad, we weren't sure what the future outlook of the tournament was. That's a very honest assessment. I hear many rumors. You know, we're in the last year of our contract right now. I've heard several rumors that the tournament's going away. That's news to me. I would hope I would know. But it's
or at least be on that mailing list.
You would hope. Exactly. Yeah. So two years ago, my boss, Harry Pate, looked at me as the last few groups were coming up 18 and, you know, the skyboxes were full and people were enjoying themselves. And he looked at me, he goes, it's more than just a golf tournament this week. He goes, we put a lot of smiles on people's faces this week and we need to find a way to make sure we don't go away. And I think that's what we've done. I think around 10 o'clock you're going to hear that's what we've done, to give you a little foreshadowing. But it's just neat. This is something that if you haven't ever been out to the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras, just give us a chance. Just give us a chance. I'll tell you what, if you call the office 593-8000 after 8 o'clock this morning and say you've never been and you want four tickets to any day, you just let them know you heard it about right here on 103.7 The Game or 103.7thegame.com, and we'll leave four tickets for you at will call the day of your choice. And come out and give us a chance. Just free from us to you for supporting this event, Acadiana. Call 593-8000. You can promote that the rest of the hour. And we'll do it tomorrow, too. If you call the office and say, I've never been here, how can I come? We'll let you know, and we'll get you four tickets at will call Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. we do need some walking scores. Thursday through Sunday, we're about two or three short per day. You can call the same 593-8000 or sign up at laopen.com. But if you've never been a part of the event, just give us a chance. I promise you, especially come out Thursday, Friday if you can. The weather is going to be spectacular. Saturday appears to be good. Sunday's going up and down a little bit, but just come give us a chance out here. And Raymond, we appreciate you guys from Delta Media, 1037thegame.com, or 1037thegame, 1037thegame.com, being out here all week long and supporting this event and bringing some more notoriety to this event in this area.
Danny, I appreciate you making the time for us, brother. We're out. This will be wrapping up Rap Game with RP3. We'll be on tomorrow from 6 to 9. Up next, Perks of the Game with Craig Perks here on 1037 The Game.